You are listening to KPTZ 91.9 FM in Port Townsend. Book Lovers Cafe is a program of author interviews and book reviews from around the sound and beyond. I'm your host, Chris Wilson. We're talking to Bill Porter, who's also known as Red Pine, and we're talking about his travel books, his translations. We'll be reading some poetry. So let's go on and talk about the hermit tradition and the whole idea of the graduate school for people that are spiritually inclined. You just hear, it seemed like, oh, we're going to go back to the land, or I'm going to go build a cabin in Alaska. And people do that kind of thing, and it doesn't always work out.
Yeah, and it doesn't either for the hermits in China. It's usually, you don't go into the mountains unless you have a practice. And it doesn't, again, you have to have an undergraduate degree, essentially, having studied with a master, whether it's Taoism or Buddhism or even Confucianism. Every Confucian academy was built in the mountains with huts around it. So these three spiritual paths of China have always had room for those who wanted to go a little higher. And so people who feel called and ready for that, usually your teacher will take you to a mountain in China. I'd say 99% of all mountains in China have no hermits. But there are certain mountains that hermits have been living for thousands of years. This is an ancient tradition where people go to spend time alone.
Do they build a place to live?
Sometimes and sometimes not. Because these mountains are hermit mountains, there's always places that have fallen into disrepair. And we're not talking about fancy places either. Usually it's mud bricks. The soil in North China, especially the Zhongnan Mountains, is a kind called loess, L-O-E-S-S, has really intense adhesive qualities. So you can form a brick just with mixing a little bit of straw, very little straw, and a form. And then you can, while it's still wet, you don't have to wait for that brick to dry. You can put another form on top of that and another form on top of that before you have to let these bricks dry. In fact, what you do is you build the walls wet and then put the roof on, and then you build a fire inside the hut for a couple of days, and you turn the hut into a teapot, basically.
You fire and harden the hut. And fire it.
Fire,
yeah,
it.
So it's hard.
And so, the huts are very easy to make.
Mm-hmm.
Usually it'll take about a week or so to make a hut. Usually the hermits, they'd enlist the help of the local farmers because they could make a little money that. But anyway, their huts, either you make it or you find one that needs a little fixing up.
What about the caves?
The caves are – nobody wants to live in a cave.
Yes.
But sometimes you do. Mm. Sometimes that is the best place. But the main thing is there has to be a water nearby and firewood.
Mm.
You have to gather firewood. And nobody cuts trees in the mountains. You gather deadfall.
Right.
And so,
or else there wouldn't be anything.
So I figured that the hermit territory is about 15 minutes. That is, around a given hut, 15 minutes. That's your territory.
Oh, 15 minutes walking around.
That you can gather enough wood to burn in your little stove. And you can also find some level places where you can grow some things. And you can also gather wild plants. And then, so that's the sort of hermit buffer, you might say. But because hermits only live on hermit mountains, you go on a hermit mountain, there's a network of hermits. So as soon as you move up to the mountain, the other existing hermits will come to check you out.
And they're curious hermits.
They're curious. Oh, of course they
and
are.
And friendly.
Yeah, it's not, they don't take vows of silence. They just want to be alone for the most part. So they look in on each other, and the old ones always teach the new ones things. Like most new hermits don't have qigong practice, for example. They don't know how to take care of their health. They don't know how to generate heat. And of course, they don't know how to identify wild plants, and they probably don't even know how to grow plants. So the old hermits sort of take the young ones under their wing and get them settled. But most hermits, of course, go up with the idea of living this life, and then it gets cold and it starts snowing. And I'd say half the new hermits who go up the mountain go down the first year.
Talk about the kind of bed that they create to help them get through the winter.
How
the bed, the platform.
Oh yes, they make because they make things out of these mud bricks. Mm-hmm. On the interior, they'll build what's called a kang, K-A-N-G, which is an oven bed, which is just a bed made out of bricks with a flue with a empty space inside, so you can build a fire in that and heat the entire bed. So. It's a wonderful thing. You don't have to waste energy heating air. You heat a single surface, and you sleep on it. You meditate on it. You read. You do your spiritual practice, whether it involves yoga or whatever. And when guests come, you entertain on your kang. Mm-hmm. And it's almost always big enough for a visitor, so you can share your kang overnight with somebody.
We are talking to Bill Porter, and he's a translator and a traveler and a person that practices Zen Buddhism. And I'm especially pleased that he's here because he can share with us some of his translations of poetry and read to them in the wonderful traditional way that poetry is shared in China. So what I've asked Bill to do is to read one of his poems. He'll introduce it from the Mountain Poems of Stonehouse, which is a wonderful book to have at your bedside. And then he's going to read it in English and then do the Chinese version, and then read it in English again so that everybody has a chance to really take this in. Thanks, Bill.
Well, Stonehouse lived in the 13th century, died in the 14th century. He lived in a hut for 35 years on this mountain, about 3 hours' drive west of Shanghai. Anyway, and he wrote poems. I just ran into his poetry by accident. I got a Qing Dynasty woodblock edition of Coal Mountain's poems when I was starting to work on getting serious about translating all of Coal Mountain's poems. Then I got more into the actual resources. So I got this nice Qing Dynasty woodblock of Coal Mountain's poems, but the publisher had added another poet at the end of Coal Mountain's poems, and that's how I discovered Stonehouse, whose poetry I liked even better. Anyway, so this is Stonehouse, living in his hut on this mountain. This is a poem that was the one night that all Chinese try to get together with their loved ones is the full moon of September, what we call the harvest moon. And so this is a poem probably written on that night. A thatched hut is lonely on a new fall night, with white peas in flower and crickets calling. Mountain moon silver evokes an old joy. Suddenly I have strolled west of the peak. Qi qi mao she xin shou ye. Bai dou hua kai luo wei ti, shan ye ru yin qian lao xing, xian xing bu jue guo feng xi. Again, a thatch hut is lonely on a new fall night, with white peas in flower and crickets calling. Mountain moon silver evokes an old joy. Suddenly I've strolled west of the peak. Though it can get pretty lonely up there. It's not easy being a hermit.
No. In this this book of poetry is about Stonehouse and his poems and the ones that he wrote. Then you have written a book called Finding Them Gone, and it's a book about your travels visiting Chinese poets of the past, of whom Stonehouse is one. It's great. It'd be a great thing to have both of these books together, dear listeners. There's maps, there's stories, there's, you know, the ideas about where these poets came from and what they, how they lived and their history, but also you meet the current people that Bill met along the way, the taxi drivers and the farmers that gave him directions, and hear all about those adventures as well, and also the monks and current hermits that are living there. So a really great book, and so I just wanted to talk about that again. So, Bill, I was curious about women's roles in poetry and in ancient China. Were there women poets that you discovered?
Oh, yes, but not many. For example, Zhu Shuzhen is one of the more famous women poets in ancient China, and her parents were so embarrassed that their daughter was a poet. When she died, they burnt everything she had written. And the only reason we have her poems is because she made copies and would give them to people, mm-hmm. and her, you know, friends. And so should I read one of her, Zhu Shuzhen's poems?
Yes, I would love that.
Again, she lived in the 11th century, 11th and 12th centuries, sitting around a glowing stove, singing silly songs, straining more new wine, reciting more new poems, none of us regretting getting drunk tonight. This time won't come again once we say goodbye. Tuan Zuo Hong Lu Chang Xiao Zi Fang Yao Xin Jiu Shang Xin Shi Da Jia Mo De Jin De Cui Yi Bie Zan Jia You Ji Shi. Sitting around a glowing stove, singing silly songs, straining more new wine, reciting more new poems. None of us regretting getting drunk tonight. This time won't come again once we say goodbye. And thinking of another poet whose poems I liked.
Mm-hmm.
Xue Tao, who lived in the 9th century. She was, professionally, she was a courtesan. And so she would join the parties of officials and sing. She became a poet. She also annoyed officials, and she was once exiled beyond the Great Wall. And this is a poem she wrote when she was living. She only spent a year in exile because then the new governor liked her poetry and got her to come back to civilization. I heard life was harsh near the wall. Now that I'm here, I know, having chosen a song from your court to sing to these borderland boys. Wen dao bie chang ku, er jin dao shi zhi. Chue zhang men xia qu, chang yi long wu er. I heard life was harsh near the wall. Now that I'm here, I know, having chosen a song from your court to sing to these borderland boys.
The borderland boys, I bet they were a rough bunch compared to the capital. So you went, kind of on an idea of structuring this book of 30 days, keeping a journal and finding the sites where these poets lived and died. You had a ritual, several rituals of paying respect to them. You want to tell us about that, what you did when you came to one of their grave sites or a place where they lived?
Well, if there's one thing that was true of all Chinese poets is they like to drink. Of course, as we know, when we drink, we often start singing out of nowhere. Well, normally we wouldn't. It's like being in the shower.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, they have never had the kind of whiskey we have. So I took American bourbon and American rye to China to pour on their graves and set in little cups along the graves. I took a bottle of George T. Stagg. And so I would, when I did find their graves, I set out these little cups because that's how Chinese honor their ancestors. They have a little ceremony where they use these little white cups where they'll pour a little white lightning into these mm-hmm. cups and leave them there for a while.
Small white porcelain cups.
That's right.
Okay.
And then they'll maybe chant something or burn some incense. And so I wouldn't usually do the incense, mm-hmm. but I'd pour the whiskey and then I'd read their poems. And one curious thing that often finding their graves was very difficult sometimes. And I usually enlist the help of a farmer to help me locate these graves. And of course, when I performed this little ceremony, very often they would be standing right next to me watching this foreigner do this little ceremony thing. And then I would read their poems. And these farmers, and you could tell they hadn't been to school, they would join me halfway through. They realized what I was doing, they would remember the lines of these poems that were written 1,500 years ago. It demonstrates how important poetry is in China. It has a status it will never have in the West. Poets are very respected people, and the art of poetry.
When you would ask someone, you know, had they heard of this poem or this poet from the 600s, and they would, and they kind of know where their family was and where they might be buried.
It was just
incredible to me.
Yeah, the knowledge of where this uh-huh. person was buried has been passed on. And sometimes there are, in some cases, the only thing a farmer could do is point to a field and say the grave was over there a long time ago. There wouldn't even be the grave.
Mm-hmm.
But the knowledge of where this person was buried was still retained because, you know, these people are living out in the countryside and there's not a lot to talk about. And so if something happened there 500, 1,000 years ago, the knowledge of that has been passed down to the people who lived in this area where nothing much happens.
That's great. There's not a lot to talk about, so we might as well memorize some poetry and sing it to one another. I want to talk about the music because besides singing the poetry, there's also this tradition of the droning tower. And can you explain as best you can what exactly these droning towers were?
Well, it was...
And was it connected to poetry?
Oh, very much, but it was also connected to Taoist practices, the Qigong. It was a Qigong practice originally, and only secondarily was it musical. So you wouldn't drone just any poem. Some poems were easier to generate chi with because of the vowels and so forth. And you can hear this practice today. The Taoists, I've looked for Taoists in China who might still practice this, and they don't. I haven't found anybody who does. But they would there are people.
The Tuvan.
The Tuvans are a good example of what droning sounds like.
And many of us in Port Townsend, they've visited here and performed here, so we've had that experience live to listen to.
Well, it began as a shamanistic practice, mm-hmm. and of course, a lot of the people in Mongolia are shamanistic, and so they've retained that skill. It was flourished in China beginning around the time of Christ, the first century or so. You hear people starting to talk about it, and by the Tang Dynasty, almost nobody's droning. That is around the 8th century, droning is passé.
You don't want to go up on that tower and just release all this loud energy to the world.
Yeah, well, that's because they were officials who were poets, and they're living in town, and they're at a party. But mm-hmm. these early droners, were people who were doing this to be as a Taoist practice to become immortal. It's part of this Taoist transformation of your body. The Taoists don't see this body as just being this exterior shell, mm-hmm. but there's it's like the Russian dolls. There's a body inside of a body, and a body inside that body, and a body inside of that body. And so by cultivating these Qigong practices, one can generate a transformation of these inner bodies so that you can lengthen your life, become immortal. Mm-hmm. And so droning was an essential practice at a certain period. And then, like I said, you don't hear about it. And for the last 1,000 years, I've never heard of anybody droning for 1,000 years that I've heard of.
Mm-hmm. I can see. So the poets, as the centuries went on, they kind of made their way and made their life by becoming officials, in the Confucian way.
Well,
passing their exams. Is that right?
Well, let me put it in a slightly different way.
Mm-hmm.
From the very beginning, poetry was essential for becoming an official. You were examined on your poetry. You had to be able to write a good poem. The Chinese word for poetry, the original meaning of the word poetry, is words from the heart. It's when people reveal who they really are. And so this has always been respected. And the art that involves this is the most respected of all arts. The Chinese don't think much of prose.
Oh.
They really don't. But poetry, that is the great literary art.
Mm-hmm.
Just like they don't think much of painting. But calligraphy, that is the ultimate graphic art, because both of these arts, calligraphy and poetry, involve the heart. They come from who you really are. They're not head stuff. It's not intellectual.
So your advice, there are still people growing up. There are people that are seeking a spiritual way. And so what advice would you give to, I was going to say a young person, but any person, trying to find a spiritual path now? How would they begin, or which way should
you? You're talking about a Chinese person or a Western?
No, I'm talking about a Western person. A Western person, because, especially here in Port Townsend, there's many seekers. And I guess when I was reading your work, it was a relief to me that I didn't have to do a lot of reading and studying about Buddhism. I could just live and, be and have my private practices. And, if I didn't know all the different strands and the different philosophies, that would be okay. So there was one quote, every day I try to do a little less. Are you still there?
Yeah. Yeah. Well, because we're Westerners, we're curious about new things. And there are spiritual practices in the West, but lately a lot of people have been looking elsewhere for something to inspire their own life of the spirit. And so when we encounter these Asian religions, for example, we often feel there's just all this stuff we need to learn. And so we can spend a lot of time messing around in the bushes, you know, among the as the Chinese say, the twigs, the branches and the twigs, rather than paying attention to the root. And of course, the root is, it's like you go on a long journey, and you just come home and say, "Oh, well, it's all about me, isn't it? And it's all about my life and how I'm going to make the decisions to get through today." Mm-hmm. But sometimes, if you haven't made that little journey, you will not have picked up maybe some skills that are necessary to stay home, to be home with who you are. So it's not necessarily a bad thing to wander around in the bushes and to learn about different aspects of Buddhism or Taoism or Islam or Christianity. But eventually, you're the person who's going to die, and you have to face that. And so all this other stuff you learn, none of it is going to help you.
We've been talking to Bill Porter, Red Pine. It's been a wonderful time spending with you. And everyone out there, please join me next time to talk more about books and authors. Red Pine or Bill Porter's books, Finding Them Gone and the Mountain Poems of Stonehouse, and also Zen Baggage are some of his most recent work. You can find them in the Port Townsend Library. You can find them online, and you can find them at our local bookstores. So thanks a lot, Jacob, for being in the booth as our engineer. And thank you very much, Carl Allen, who is going to edit this, is editing them, and is going to smooth out all the rough edges. Thank you to all the volunteers and supporters who make this radio station possible. KPTZ, Port Townsend.